Stampede Blue. What we talking about? Indianapolis, AFC South. Stampede Blue, let's air it out. Fly route, let's air it out. Topics, loaded like offense. Colt-centric, talk about it often. Stampede Blue, let's air it out. Fly route, let's air it out. Do it big, like lines for an offense.
Welcome back to another Stampede Blue Colts cast, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley. Tonight, we got my man, Chris Blystone. Working with me tonight, we're going to go through a little bit of some of the things that we can expect over here in the next several days and weeks and even months, I suppose, and get into a couple of your questions or at least a couple of your conversations that you guys wanted to kind of spark through the show. But first, let me remind you guys that the show, the Colts Cast, is brought to you by Mike Ernest and his Indy Home Pros team. If you guys are buying or selling a home, make sure you get a hold of him and his number one real estate team in Indiana. Make sure they're on your side, Mike Ernest, at 317-285-9691 or CircleCityForSale.com. So, Chris, what's going on, my man? Thank you for jumping on with me tonight.
Not a lot, man. How's it going?
Going well. It's going well. Colts start minicamp tomorrow. That ought to be interesting. We've had some interesting things happen in the past years with minicamp. Not typically, but we have had some things. And most notably, I think, last year was Mathias Farley. Kind of earned the if everybody can kind of hit the rewind button there. What do we see? TJ Green was getting talked up through OTAs and all that stuff last year, and they were really pumped about what he was going to be bringing. And then Mathias Farley was getting all the starting snaps and everything, and all that talk and that narrative really kind of changed. What I would like to talk about tonight, Chris, is there anybody on this roster that we kind of see maybe making an impact through minicamp this next couple days of actual practice? I think Kevin Bowen said something about it today on Twitter that he didn't expect Luck to throw, although and we kind of talked about this off air, we'd just like to see him playing catch with somebody, even if it's just a few yards away, just because then we wouldn't have to listen to all the crap nationally about it anymore. And even then, Chris, they would probably just downplay it and be like, oh, he's just playing 10-yard catch. I mean, you know.
I could see the narrative immediately becoming like, oh, Luck can only throw a 5-yard ball. He's got a noodle arm, can't make the throws. They can't get him out there. I mean, I feel like somebody would have that negative spin. Pro Football Talk undoubtedly would have some reason to tell everybody that, you know, this is the sign that the sky is falling. But it would be nice to just see him out there sooner rather than later, just so we can put this story to bed. I think all of us are tired of hearing it. I know there are some people who still aren't on board with that Luck's going to be okay, and that's fine. You're welcome to that opinion. I don't agree with you. I would like to just have it be done so we can not talk about it ever again, hopefully.
Right.
But I don't anticipate seeing that. I still think they're just going to take all of the time that they have at their disposal before they put him out there. So,
yeah. All right. So let's kind of dig into this real quick. Like I said, last year we saw a little bit of it, and there was probably more than just Farley, but I think Farley was the main talking point last year, just because I think the coaching staff was talking up TJ Green so much up to this point. Let's look at the offensive line. I think everybody understands what Quentin Nelson brings. There's a lot of other guys, though, not named Ryan Kelly or Anthony Costanzo, that have quite a battle ahead of them this offseason, heading into training camp and everything else. With this being such a light, you know, contact, basically incidental contact still type of situation with minicamp, do we really see anything at all happening with the offensive line? Anybody standing out? I mean, there's just really no way for them to stand out, in my opinion.
I think we probably can't see anything stand out. It'd be down to the coaching staff to tell us maybe that somebody who's a younger lineman is just picking things up really fast or something like that. I don't know that you can see physically, because they're not going to be making contact. You're not going to see, you're just not going to see the same level of play from some of these guys. You're not going to be, because the biggest thing with our two top rookie guys in Nelson and Smith is they're physical. They can't show off one of their biggest, most valuable traits at this stage. So you're not going to see anything overly impressive out of them. But what would be good to hear, and I think you're probably only going to hear this in vanilla, you know, terms, because this seems to be the way with this coaching staff, is you know, that they're, you're not going to hear any definitive like, oh, Braden Smith sucks, he's doing a terrible job of figuring out the playbook or whatever. It seems like they kind of just stick to the normal coach speak, and they're not going to give us a whole lot of information. But if you're seeing maybe the guys who are, you know, talking to the coaching staff after, if maybe they get a hold of the like the offensive line coach and hear some, you know, praise specifically from a position coach or something like that, you might be able to figure out how they're picking up the system. Beyond that, I don't know you can gauge very much.
Right. It just seems like a bad position to expect something out of, you know, mini camp. Once we get into training camp, though, it does seem that once they get through OTAs and they get into mini camp, we start to maybe kind of see where their mind's at as far as starting unit, second unit, rotational guys who could possibly be utility people. But we see that that's mainly Joe Haig. We know that wasn't it Denzel Good that was working at left tackle? Because I saw George talk about it, and he was saying that, I think he said that Denzel Good was working at left tackle, but then I believe Kevin Bowen said something about him being at right tackle. So there was a little bit of difference there, and I don't know if maybe one miswrote their tweet or whatever it was, but I think that's about as deep as we're going to get, like you said, other than some simple conversation about those guys with and from the coaching staff.
And you would
to drop it out.
And you'd be able to tell probably at this point if somebody looks totally lost,
right,
out there. If somebody's not able to identify defense and they just look like they don't know what's going on, I think you could probably identify that with some of the rotational guys, or if they're just really not picking up the system well. So basically the only thing you can find out right now is that they're terrible. I mean, it's nothing you want to know. I don't think it's going to stick out if they're doing well. You're only going to know if it's like, oh God, that guy doesn't have a clue what he's doing.
Right.
And that's not the kind of thing we want to be able to identify, hopefully, from any of them. So,
right. And for that matter, while we're on it, I think the majority of that aside, now see, it's a little different. I mean, cause I guess you can do technique with offensive line, but defensive line, think about that pass rush technique. You can see that. How are you going to really see these guys kind of, you know, battle each other for, you know, gaining some pressure, you know, whatever they're doing. There's not going to be a lot that the defensive line guys can do either. I think this is really almost a skill position secondary type practice where you're going to be able to see anything. You're going to see some guys, and I'm kind of just blowing the rest of this conversation right here, but you're going to see the wide receivers. How are they running their routes? Who's got the good hands? Who is, you know, picking up the offense that way? Running backs, their speed, their decisiveness, the way that they can kind of run through the playbook as well, what they're doing out of the backfield as far as receiving, how Jacoby Brissett more or less is doing in his second year with the team, although it is a new playbook, a new staff, so on and so forth for him. So it's still a learning process in that regard. But in the opposite side of that, then we're going to be looking at safeties, cornerbacks, and linebackers here. One thing that I am very interested in actually is, and kind of to preface this, I don't think that we're going to see Darius Leonard in the starting lineup, even if he's healthy, as far as in minicamp. I don't see he's going to be running with the ones. I don't think that's something that'll happen just because he's been out so much. I don't think that he could possibly do that unless he is just on, you know, really on his game as far as with the playbook. So, I mean, let's talk about the linebackers. It seems to be that unit that everybody pretty much agrees on is the most up in the air as far as where they see a starter, what the rotational guys will look like as far as who is there and in what position. They've really moved these guys around quite a bit. It's pretty interesting heading into minicamp.
Yeah, I think, again, that's one of those that's going to be really tough to solidify anything. I think that battle probably is going to be the most significant of the offseason battles, trying to figure out who is going to be the starting linebackers, because obviously with Eberflus' scheme, they're really important, and there's not anybody who's really established as far as like a guy you would look at and say, this is definitely a starter. I mean, it's pretty wide open. There are a lot of guys you would like to think could step in and be that. I'm interested to see how Anthony Walker looks this offseason, because he really missed an opportunity last season because of injury. He was just constantly, I believe it was a hamstring, wasn't it? Just a nagging hamstring injury all season long. Just really kind of, I mean, when he came in at the end of the season, I saw some flashes, and you still don't really know with a hamstring injury that had him out that long, what percentage he was really at. And so I think it's going to be a big year for him in a group that really needs some people to step up to see what he's got and how he's going to transition to this new scheme. And you know, I think he's going to be somebody I'm interested to see as far as a returning guy. And then Sky Moore is another guy who's really going to be interesting to watch because, you know, you've already heard his name, you know, coming up in OTAs and stuff. And we liked him for the, you know, for the draft guide that we put out. We liked him and I was pleased to see him land with the Colts. And so I'll be interested to see what he brings to the table. And then obviously all those, you know, guys like, you know, Darius Leonard, we want to see him get on the field, but it doesn't sound like maybe that's going to be the case until actual training camp starts, just based on what we've seen so far. I mean, maybe he shows up and is ready to go, you know, for minicamp, but I guess we'll see.
Right. And he and both he and Braden Smith are both unsigned, but that's not going to keep them out of minicamp. And I believe up and through minicamp, what these guys do if they're unsigned is they end up signing, if not their contract, they'll sign. It's like a protection agreement to where if they were to get hurt throughout, you know, just drills or anything of that matter, then the team automatically is going to give them what they would have gotten for their slotted draft pick status, whatever you want to call it. But it's interesting, this conversation kind of, and just as a quick aside here, it makes very little sense, in my opinion, to sign one of those. Just sign the damn contract. I mean, what's the difference? If you're going to sign a protection thing, and I don't mean necessarily the player, but both sides, if you're going to, like the Colts in general or any team, if you were going to sign the guy, why don't you just sign him anyways? I mean, basically, the only thing that he does, the only leverage he has is if there's some offset language that he wants or that he and his agent want in the contract that the Colts aren't at this point willing to offer. The only leverage that player has is to not show up, is to not participate. They have that option if they're not signed.
Yeah, and there's just so little value to that. I mean, you look at what you lose as a rookie,
right?
And you look at the rookie wage scale and the way the CBA is set up. There's not any reason to have these kind of long extended holdouts, except you see that in the occasion. I mean, Joey Bosa is the person who comes to mind, where you have somebody who is, you know, one of the top picks in the draft or the top pick in the draft, however it you know it unfolds, and then you have some contention in language. I think that was maybe what his was something to do with the language of the contract or something like that. I don't think it's a dollar amount because that's obviously not really that flexible, but it ends up being silly, and you miss time, and it costs you the rookie. And I think a lot of the times, that's more to do with the agent than the player themselves. Maybe there's some players who are coming into the league with that kind of big headedness that they think they're, I think most of the time that's the agent who's pressing. And of course that's their job. They're trying to get the best deal for their, you know, their client. And I understand that, but mm-hmm. ultimately it hurts your player because he misses time, he misses reps, and then he doesn't get, I mean, he has a, if ever there was a linebacking group to come into and just have a free and clear chance to get on the field, this is it. And you do not want to be missing all this stuff.
No. And that was going to be my point next, is that for him, not only just where he was picked, that showed the importance of not only his skills, but where, you know, the positional need for the Colts this year at linebacker, he needs to get his butt on the field. I mean, I know that he's, you know, got some underlying injury of some sort that they haven't disclosed yet. And I can't remember if it's mini camp or training camp where they kind of have to start disclosing that stuff. But this is, you know, he needs, whether or not, and like I said, I wouldn't expect him to be on the field or in working with the ones by any means at all. But he still needs to be on the field working out, not just off with a training staff and stuff like that, to get himself back. Because I mean, there is a lot of competition with this group. I mean, Najee Good was a guy that we kind of just just kind of assumed that he was going to be a starter at one of the three positions. I assumed anyways that he would be at the mic, being that was kind of the role that he played while he was, I believe, in the Super Bowl. But you know, they like Zaire Franklin, they like Matthew Adams. Walker is in there. Tyrell Adams has gotten quite a bit of play also with the ones, you know, in and out. But kind of just seems that each of them are getting their rotation with the ones as well. So I don't know that that necessarily means anything with any of them, but you know, Antonio Morrison working at the Sam primarily, I believe, Jeremiah George, what he's done, you know, there's so many of those guys that we have heard very little about, but we've also heard, you know, that they've been working with the ones, or certain ones have. It's an interesting group going forward. I'm interested to see, you know, with possibly some, you know, media availability tomorrow, if they can get a, you know, a chance to kind of talk about who's running with the ones with that group, because I think that's their starting point. They've only got 3 days and they don't see these guys for a month. And the Colts are going to announce their training camp days, I believe Wednesday. They're going to hold a press conference at the Grand Park. So that'll be pretty interesting. That's going to be an awesome venue, though, for this people. I mean, I think that a lot of people are going to be able to come out. I'm excited to go to be able to get there and to kind of see it from the other side of it as well. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. So they want to get these guys in there, and okay, this is our ones, you know, that I think in minicamp they've got a pretty good idea who they like where, and minus Darius Leonard as far as at the will, who's basically that's his position, and I don't mean his starting position, but that's his position, that's where he's going to play, that's almost for certain. The rest of these guys are very much on the move and moving around, so I'm anxious to kind of see what happens with this linebacking group in the first couple of days of practice with that. So with that, let's talk about the cornerbacks and the safeties and such. I mean, this cornerbacking crew has very little experience. It's a group where DeSir and ultimately that's it. Or Nate Hairston, I guess those two are the most experienced on this cornerback crew. That's, I don't want to say scary, because we all like what Quincy Wilson can offer, what his physical skill set brings to the table. We know that Nate Hairston is an important piece, because he's possibly and more than likely going to hold down that nickel spot. But this is another group that's going to be getting a lot of rotation, I think, in minicamp. I mean, is there somebody in this group that you think might stand out amongst the crew here?
Well, I've been a Quincy Wilson fan for a long time. And I broke down film on his week two against Arizona, and I was pretty well sold on him from that point, and spent the rest of the season scratching my head trying to figure out what was going on. And now we know kind of what happened there, and we understand that was a lot on him. And, you know, he's talked about how he's improved. I hope that's true. But like you said, there's a lot of questions. And when you have a group that's that young, you're just going to be a little bit nervous. I mean, the thing is, it's a huge boom or bust possibility, because you've got somebody like Hairston who looked really good last season. And, you know, if he takes the next step, he could just be an excellent, you know, slot player. I anticipate they will try him on the outside a little bit, just to be able to see what they've got in him there. But Quincy is really going to be the key. How he plays, how he shows up for training camp. If he shows up looking good and in good shape, that's going to be something that I think is going to be really important to watch, because the big knock on him was coasting in practice, not really working like he needed to work. So hearing how he's doing in practice, hearing that he is standing out and that he looks good, that he's moving well and everything like that, I think that's going to be important. Because if he's not doing that, then you're going to rely on somebody else to have to step in and take that role, who's either even less experienced and probably less, in all reality, less talented than what he is. And I mean, then you're talking about putting a lot of additional pressure on your safety group, who is also really young. Because if your corners can't cover, that's going to fall on, you know, you got a couple of guys who we think can be pretty good at safety, but you know, it trickles, you know, down pretty quickly if we don't have some good production from those young corners. On the flip side of that, if Quincy has this huge jump and you have an improved play from, you know, from DeSir in this new system, who's talked, you know, all of them have talked about how it's a little bit of a more easy system to play in. If that's true and we see a step forward, we could see a huge improvement if you have somebody like Quincy really bring it and play like we think he can play.
Right. The I think Desir is a little more at home as well in this, whereas kind of the opposite with Quincy. Quincy was more of a man corner. And I think Desir was too, but I think he, you know, and for what he played last year, he did well. And he had some really tough catches. If we remember when he first took that starting role over, they were making some really tough catches on him. He had his hand in the right spot. He was in the hip pocket of the receiver, but they were still making the catches. And that, I think, not that in particular, but his skill set in general is possibly a little better made for a little off man in zone where he can kind of break on the ball and make these plays that they're wanting. And he's a physical guy. I like that about him. And that's what you get from guys who are typically man corners. But what that also does for this is it helps this cornerback crew already bring the needed physicality from the cornerbacks on the outside that this scheme really desires and needs going forward. So, you know, him, Wilson, I think DJ White's going to get a few looks. I think he's going to get quite a few looks, actually. I'm wondering about Channing Stribling. I think he's a guy that they really like, and that's he's one that we don't know a bunch about right now, but he's got the good height and he's got the good length. He's only been in for a year. He's been in a physical defense, and he comes out of a physical defense rather in Michigan from college. So I mean, he's definitely got what the Colts are looking for as far as just measurables and physicality. And I think that this cornerback crew is going to be interesting to watch. Now, the other one that's going to be interesting is the safeties. But we'll get to that here in just a minute, right after this break here. And this ad read for my man, Mike Ernest. Colts fans, we have some exciting news for our guy, Mike Ernest. He recently moved his business over to RE/MAX, Advanced Realty, and Indy Home Pros team, the number one selling real estate team in Indiana. If you're thinking about buying or selling your home, you need to call Mike Ernest at the Indy Home Pros team. Mike and his team of real estate professionals are experts in the greater Indianapolis real estate market, and they've helped people just like you achieve their real estate goals, whether it's using the latest marketing and social media tools to sell your home or using a combined experience of his entire team to find the right home for you. You can rest assured knowing that no one knows the ins and outs of buying and selling homes in the Indianapolis area better than Mike Ernest. Listen, folks, when it comes to buying or sell your home, you need a true pro on your side, and Mike Ernest is that guy. He's received numerous industry awards for being a leader in the Indianapolis real estate market. So when it comes to buying or selling your home, don't get burned by amateurs. Contact Mike Ernest, whether you live in Indy or any of the surrounding communities. Mike Ernest and the Indy Home Pros team can help. Put the number one real estate team in Indiana on your side by calling Mike Ernest at 317-285-9691 or find him online at CircleCityForSale.com. Again, that's Mike Ernest at 317-285-9691 or CircleCityForSale.com. So make sure you guys are checking out Mike there. All right, let's bump over to the safeties here real quick. And thanks again to Mike for sponsoring the show. We really appreciate it. And this is another group, Chris, that has Malik Hooker possibly not coming back in time for week one, at least fully back. We've got Ronald Martin there, who I think he's going to surprise some people. I do. I don't know about through OT or through minicamp or anything like that, but I think that he's a fairly solid safety that I think people are kind of overlooking a little bit. But we've also obviously got Clayton Gethers, who's been in and out of practice. Obviously, Matthias Farley, he's been there, Mr. Durable and Mr. Reliable. And TJ Green's another one we haven't heard anything about thus far throughout, I mean, their practices. What do we expect and what do you expect from this group? Anything at all?
Well, I like you said, with Matthias Farley there, he can only stand to get better. You know, he puts the time in. He was very reliable. And I think that, you know, he's going to be a solid role player. I don't know that it's best to have him as your starter, but if you have to start him in place of Malik Hooker week one, he's proven that he can hang. I mean, he may not be the ideal guy, but he's definitely a solid contributor.
Let me ask you this real quick. And Hooker aside, with Gether's injury history, the fact that Farley played so much last season, do you think there's any chance at all that Farley sees the field maybe more than Gethers does this year? And I don't even know if I have a take on it. I think that I probably don't think that he does, but I think that it's just something that might pop up that we wouldn't expect, because I think that Ballard is a very much a what have you done for me lately kind of guy, I think. Mm-hmm. And Farley, like I said, Farley, Mr. Reliable, always there, played well last season, had a couple picks, was one of the top three tacklers on the team last year. It just makes me wonder, like I said, with Gether's injury history, does maybe Ballard and the coaching staff possibly like, you know, what Farley brings better? And maybe does he fit this defense better? I tend to believe no, but I'd like to see if you have any contradictory thoughts on that.
Well, you know, I was just getting to say, with Gether's injury history, it makes me nervous penciling him in as an obvious starter. And I really like him, and I like the attitude that he brings to the team, and that is a little bit lacking. And he is, I mean, weirdly enough, he's one of the more tenured older guys on this defense. Not that that says a whole lot. It's a pretty young defense, but he's one of those guys, I think, who brings something more than just his play. And Farley does as well. I think he probably has a lot of that presence also. But where I see Farley maybe getting an option is, I think, unless you see one of these newer guys come in and really pick up some reps, Farley can play the free safety role better than somebody like TJ, unless Green really like turns it on and has turned a corner. And I would be shocked, because the only corner that I expect him to turn is one where he like nails one of his fellow players after. I mean, honestly, I have no hope for that guy. I know Ballard continues to speak highly of him. He's got the athletic ability. But I'm not holding my breath for TJ Green to break out. If he does, that it would be fantastic. I'm pulling for him. I hope he does. I'm not expecting it, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if you have a pretty good blend of Farley and Gether's, because they both offer a lot of the same benefits. Mm-hmm. I think you might even see, and I don't know, we've kicked this idea around before. I don't know that we've heard any corroboration, but, you know, from the Colts, but I wouldn't be surprised if you even see some three safety sets where you have Gether's in there as like a money backer kind of position or something like that. I don't know that we've heard them say anything about anything like that, but we've just kind of looked at the personnel and thought, okay, well, with some of the raw players on this roster, maybe that would make sense, because you've got two guys that can both tackle, that both have ball skills, that can play the box well. Maybe it makes sense in some of those packages to use both of those guys. So I think you'll see both of them. Farley certainly earned playing time. I mean, he had one of the prettiest picks, I believe, is against Seattle, that I think I've seen a couple of years, as just an excellent little tip drill that he just made look like, I mean, it was not easy, but he made it look so easy. I was watching that film and thinking, I bet I could do that.
Going to the sideline there where he tapped.
Yep. Oh man, it was beautiful. It was beautiful, but he made it look so smooth and so easy, and it definitely wasn't. And to me, that's what I think of. I mean, when I think of last season and Farley, that's the play I think of. And he had, that was definitely his prettiest one, but he contributed in a big way. And like you said, Ballard rewards that. I don't think that you discount what Gether's offers, but you've got some competition there. And that's the thing, we're not used to this on the defensive side of the ball. We're not used to this on the offensive line, but I think we're going to finally start to see, especially once training camp actually gets rolling, this mantra that Ballard has been preaching about competition. Like, when you're competing against a paper tiger, there's not a lot of competition, but we're actually getting to the point where we might see what that really looks like, where there really is a tough decision between two guys that we think both could start. And that, to me, is very exciting.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And that's kind of why it has popped into my head. Like I said, it's hard for me to say that he's going to overtake him, but I think I fall more in line with you that there's going to be a nice mix and a good rotation of the safety group. And, you know, and I think some of those situations, you know, and Hooker's not a small guy. Hooker proved last year that he was more physical than people were giving him credit for coming out of the draft. It's going to be interesting. I still think that they probably should have bitten on trying to sign either Boston or Vaccaro. And what was it yesterday? I wrote some things about situational football where the Colts have been, you know, lacking the past couple of years, and you know, conversely, like how the Cowboys over the past couple of years fell into those categories and where they ranked, you know, battled off of each other. And one of the things that I noticed as I was looking through some of the things is that Trey Boston on late downs, where the opposing offense is on third and fourth down of 6 yards or more, Boston had like 5 of his 7 interceptions throughout the year. So he comes through in critical downs.
Yeah.
And that team, that to me seems like it's a pretty important thing. And also Breland, cornerback that we were talking to, some people were asking for some, not, I don't know if they looked for stats, but they wanted to see some traits and stuff that was, you know, why would they be helpful? Well, this directly is helpful. Breland over the past 2 years was either, I think, 4th or 5th in passes defensed. And I think he had 4 interceptions over the past couple of years. That's not a ton of interceptions, but when I think, man, I really wish I could remember. I just wrote this the other night, but I think it was upwards of 20 some odd, you know, maybe almost 30 passes defended from Breshad Breland. And that's important. The Colts need that. You know, their pass defense was god awful over the past couple of years. And to what, 2 years ago, they had 8 interceptions and they still ended with like 21 because over the past 2 years, because of last year, getting some interceptions.
Well, so, think about, you know, early on in the Pagano Luck era, what a difference maker Mike Adams was for those, for being the guy who made interceptions. I mean, he didn't make a ton of interceptions, but the interceptions that he made were in clutch situations that were game changing interceptions.
Absolutely.
And the benefit of a guy like that, who has a nose for the ball. And I mean, it's every bit as important as Luck's ability to just drag a team from behind and come back and win. You know, a defender's ability to just turn it on when it really matters and just make that play that you've got to have. And I know that you know, some people are going to say, well, that's just Luck and it just happens that way. And there's not anything really to that. But when those kind of guys continue to find themselves in that situation, that's not Luck to me. There's something to that. And he was definitely one of those guys that I always thought had that kind of mojo going for him, that he could just find, you know, that play. And so having somebody like that makes a huge difference, because Mike Adams may have been as much responsible for how well the Colts did in those first couple of years, you know, as anybody else was, because he made those difference making plays that kind of put them over the edge in some of those games where it was close.
Yeah.
And so finding a guy like that makes a ton of sense. And it's a little surprising they didn't go that way. The only, I guess we don't fully know what kind of demands this new system is going to put on all of those players on the back end, because we don't hear Ballard hardly talk about those at all. He's talking front seven and, oh yeah, we also have secondary. I mean, he doesn't spend a whole lot of time diving into secondary players. Not that obviously he's got talent in drafting them and has helped do that in the past with the Chiefs and, you know, and Bears. So it's not that that's irrelevant to him, but he's thinking so much about this front seven that I don't know what kind of pressure we should expect to be put on those guys. Maybe he's thinking it's not going to be as important as we think it is, because we're used to, you know, Pagano putting those guys on an island and they're not going to be dealing with that same situation. So,
right. So let's talk about the running back group. I think this group is kind of, I want to say, top heavy. I think that we have a real good idea who the top four are going to be. I think obviously when you get down to the way it is, I think you've got Turbin, Mac, Nyheim Hines and Jordan Wilkins as the, you know, the top four, or the four favorites, so to speak. Can Josh Ferguson, Christine Michael, either one of those guys, you know, make a dent in their bid for playing time or even a roster spot?
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty tough for anybody. Because the guy they got to beat is Turbin. I mean, that's the guy they got to knock out, because those other guys, they've just invested draft capital in them. And even though Ballard is not afraid to cut somebody loose, I don't see him cutting loose a draft pick like that unless, I mean, for somebody that he already had. I mean, he's drafted somebody to replace a person that he thought needed to be replaced, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, or that he at least thought he needed to improve. So I think the guy you've got to beat is Turbin, and I don't think there's somebody else on the roster that has the skill set to fill what he can do. Mm-hmm. And I think Turbin has proven that he deserves a spot. I mean, a freak injury knocked him out, but it's hard not to like what he brings to the table, especially if you put it in the context of the kind of things that Reich likes to do. I mean, he is that, you know, pounded in guy that third down and short running back that can make those plays necessary to make Reich's offense continue to hum. And other than, I mean, if you compare, Mac and Hines are a lot the same. They're not exactly the same, but they're all, they have a lot of similarities in playing style. You know, kind of that one cut and go back. That is, that's, they're definitely, obviously they're different. They're not the same player, but they have a similar skill set.
Right.
And so when you kind of want to change it up from that pure speed guy, you've got a proven guy in Turbin. Obviously Ferguson's not offering that. So I don't know. I have a hard time thinking that you're going to dump one of those two rookies. You're definitely not getting rid of Mac. So Turbin in my mind is the guy who's got to go. And I just don't think there's anybody on the team that's going to be able to bump him.
Yeah, I don't either. And while I don't think that Turbin will have probably quite the, that type of situational touches, I guess, with the third and short as he did last year, because I think that the offense will be so different. I think that's definitely his role. You know, and there isn't a better player on this roster that fits that role. That's just the way it is. So I don't really see much happening there. I think Ferguson, in order for him to make the team, has got to be lights out. And I don't see Christine Michael really as making a solid play for the roster either. But the tight end group has me pretty interested. I mean, when you look at Swope, Ebron, Jack Doyle, Ross Travis, and Daryl Daniels. Daryl Daniels got some experience last year. Swope set out a year. Ross Travis came in last year late and looked to be a really interesting piece that they could use. Dropped a lot of weight, I think around 10 to 15 pounds between last year and this year. He's down to under 250, and he's 6'6". He's Doyle's size, but he is definitely a much more mobile piece in this offense, I think. I don't think he's going to get a ton of reps if we're looking to the season, but I definitely think he makes the team. I think Daryl Daniels right now is the odd guy out. And Mo Alie-Cox is there too. He's a second year practice squad guy. I don't think there's any debate really with that right now. He was out all last year and most of last year with injury anyways, I believe. But Daryl Daniels, you know, proved that he could be a blocker. He's not a small guy, 6'3", 250 as well, or close to 250. But he's just not got the dynamic that the Colts need right now. That pretty much puts the onus of blocking on Doyle and Travis, whereas Eric Swope, depending if he can come back and be he was improving last year as a blocker. He still wasn't where he needs to be considered a good blocker, I guess. And Eric Ebron is nothing close to a blocker. So, I mean, they've got an interesting mix of guys there. And this is another position that seems to be, you know, do they keep four guys? Because if they do, they've pretty much got themselves four guys. And I think that Daryl Daniels is the odd guy out. Pending Eric Swope coming back and just looking nothing like he did before his injury, then I think that, you know, could possibly play a big role in it as well.
Yeah. I think this is a make or break year for Swope, because at some point potential has to turn into reality. Like you've got to see something, and it sucks that he's been injured and he's been had these constant, you know, drawbacks to keeping him out from really looking like the player that he sometimes shows like he really could be. And he's a really exciting prospect, but at some point you got to see him put it together. And I really hope it's this year. Because if it isn't, like you said, you've got guys waiting in the wings and you've got some positions that maybe, you know, you may say, look, we've got a tight end in Ebron, and you know, if we need to add if we're going to keep three, maybe we want another blocking tight end. Maybe we already think that Doyle is good enough at both as the hybrid that we're going to bring in. You know, we're going to bump Swope and we're going to have, you know, a different configuration. I don't know if they would only keep three or not, right, but
light, but
Swope is going to have to, if he's going to get on the field, he's going to have to show up, because Ebron is going to definitely be ready to go, and he's got something to prove. And now he kind of has a little bit of relief, maybe the same thing. I mean, now I hesitate to buy too much into this, because this is the same kind of rhetoric that everybody was like, oh, Philip Dorsett went to New England, now the stigma's off of him, he's going to do great. Obviously that worked. you know, I hesitate to give that too much credence, but he's 25 years old. And he's in an offense where a guy knows how to use tight ends, And he's already talked about how well he's clicking with Reich. Now, I think a lot of guys are talking that way. I think Reich obviously connects with these players, and that's good. But how many times have we seen with players that how important that relationship with a coach is and how they mesh and how that coach is able to get through to them? One of the things that I've continued to read on Ebron is that, you know, most of his drops, which is the big knock that everybody has on him, are concentration related. They're focus related. So if you can find a way to get this guy to focus in and bring his game to another level, it's not a talent thing. It's not that his hands are dysfunctional. It's that he's not focused and not honed in. And we don't even know. I mean, I look at his numbers and it's not like they're nearly as bad as everybody plays them out to be. You look at the percentages and you're like, okay, this guy gets all kinds of grief for being, you know, butterfingers, but I'm not seeing that reflected in the numbers. Like he's just got some awful, you know, percentages or anything. They're respectable. If he put out the numbers he did last season or in 2016, the Colts are going to be thrilled. Right. If they could get that production out of he and Doyle both or anything close to it, you know, and get something going with Hilton, they're going to be doing well. I mean, they're going to be doing really well. So, Swope's going to have an uphill battle. He's going to have to bring it. And I think that he can. And I think it'd be really exciting to be able to have four solid tight ends that you can rotate in and out, and have, you know, like a heavy package and have a couple of stretch guys that you could throw out there to the outside if you want to. And, you know, one of the things Reich's talked about, and you've heard the players already starting to echo the same thing, is I think Ebron was actually the quote. First of all, we got to have him around because he's a great quote so far. But, you know, he said he's 7'11", but he's always open. But one of the things I thought was interesting is they talk about using every player at every position to do everything. So, and we've seen, you know, this talk from Eagle stuff where they can run the same play and just use different personnel. This is just something that could be really exciting to see if they can, you know, bump. Can you imagine Swope and Ebron both running the outside and sticking TY in the slot and then have somebody like Mack or Hines, you know, in a little dump off pass situation? You could do some nasty things with an offense if all those guys are clicking. So absolutely. I hope they step it up. I hope we see both of those guys kind of live up to their potential, but we'll see. Probably better than we can see even with running backs. We may get to see, you know, those guys stand out here in the next in this next week's mini camp stuff.
Yeah, I'm excited just because I'm hoping that the Ross Travis train stays on track, because I'm excited to see him. I'm excited to see what he can do, how they can use him, you know, in the middle of the field for the most part, and kind of eliminate some of the responsibilities from what Doyle typically has to do. Mm-hmm. So I think that'll help a lot. Not only that, but I think it'll open up this offense quite a bit for all the real playmakers on the outside. The wide receiver group is a different one here than what we've been talking about for the most part. Kaysen Williams, that's a guy who could make a real big impression, not only in minicamp here, but this summer in training camp. Steve Ishmael, the guy out of Syracuse, a lot of people were talking him up, both, you know, 6'2", 212. Ryan Grant is probably the guy that comes in, and in the way that he's been described, Zachary Hicks, new to the Stampede Blue team, he told us that he's kind of a guy who just is going to do what's expected of him, nothing real flashy and whatnot. But that might be, if he's not a consistent type of just do what he's supposed to do as far as production, that could be his exit. I mean, in my opinion, that, you know, with all the young guys that are on here. Obviously Reese Fountain, they drafted him. We've seen what he can do. He's an exciting guy. Deion Kane's been splashing in OTAs and stuff like that. So I think that when you consider all the young talent here, Dre Anderson, KJ Brent, Chester Rogers, obviously Krishan Hogan's one of my personal favorites, obviously, and Shontavis Jones, there's a lot of guys on here that could earn a roster spot, but they've got a longer road to do it, I guess. Nothing is going to happen in minicamp that is going to propel them onto the roster. They are going to have to prove it for the next several months. And that is going to be the funnest group for me. The linebacking group will be the most, not exciting, but the most relevant group to watch, I think. The wide receiver group is going to be a lot of fun to watch because it's going to be a lot of new names, a lot of guys that are really trying to show that they can fit into this offense and be playmakers. this is going to be a group that excites me. This is a group that I can't wait to see. And if I have to guess on one, I think that I'm going to say that we start hearing Kaysen Williams' name a lot. He's a guy that the Colts have been looking for a while. If he's healthy, I honestly don't even remember if he's been to OTA. So, I mean, I should probably, you know, pipe down just a touch, but he's got good size. He's over 6 foot, I think 6'2", in the 220 range. But I really believe that we're going to start seeing, you know, Krishan Hogan start to rise to the top. We're going to see Deion Kane start to rise to the top. Some of these other guys, and I think Brent is a guy who a lot of people have their eye on as well. Reese Fountain might be the guy who ends up being kind of the back end of this wide receiver crew. But then again, he could also be the number three or four guy as well. There's a lot to be had here. There's a lot of jockeying at this wide receiver position over the next couple months, 3 months, that is going to be a lot of fun to watch. Chris, I don't even think that there's another position that is anywhere near as exciting to watch.
No, I mean, and the thing that's going to come into play a lot is how good some of these guys can be as special teamers, because the reality is that these guys are, you know, they're probably not going to run a lot of three wide receiver sets, I would guess, even just because they've got some talent at tight end and they got some talent at running back. I don't know that they'll consistently get that third and fourth wide receiver are going to get the snaps even during the regular season that, you know, that we might have seen last season. I mean, obviously Hilton, you know, he's not going anywhere. I expect him to be on fire for camp because he's one of those guys in the last few years that has just looked great. Last year, he didn't look great because he's getting passes from Scott Holdeen So, I mean, and was it Walker that they kept trying to convince us was such a, you know, gift to football? I expect that he will look excellent. Personally, I'm wondering if Chester Rogers with Luck back at the helm isn't going to look pretty darn good.
Yeah.
We may not see that this week. Although Brissett has been being touted by the, you know, some of the media that's gotten eyes on practice as really looking pretty polished and looking much more confident and better in this new scheme. And I hope that's true. Maybe that the scheme fits him better. And Reich obviously knows backup quarterbacks. So maybe he's been able to kind of do some QB whispering to Brissett and kind of help him along a little bit. But, you know, hopefully you start seeing some things out of Chester Rogers. I really liked what we saw out of him toward the end of 2016. Like you said, Ryan Grant, if he proves to be the Jack Doyle of the receiver core, that's valuable. Even if that's all that he is just a good guy to go to in a pinch. That's what Reggie Wayne was in his later years early on with Luck. He wasn't doing spectacular things anymore, but he was a security blanket to Luck, and that was invaluable and a veteran presence. And, you know, so there's definitely some, you know, some value there. And obviously, you know, he's a reliable, like a durable player. I mean, he hasn't missed a game despite his, you know, quote unquote failed physical with the Ravens. I mean, he's been a durable player. And so if he can be that guy, you're talking about which one of these guys who are next is going to be able to make an impact on special teams and also, you know, be that, you know, maybe contending for that third, fourth, fifth. I don't know that they keep six. You think they keep six receivers?
I think it's more likely. I think it's really hard because until you really get into the breakdown of the entire roster itself, it's really hard to discern whether they do or not. I think that they're going to have to, though. Because they're going to need, like you said, there are some special teams qualities that are going to fall in line with this group. Like Fountain is a guy who has return game in his past. I mean, do you keep that because he could possibly be an electric guy in the return game? You know, I mean, I think you need that, whether he is a top four receiver on this team at the end of the day or not. You know, I mean, so there's definitely some of that comes with it, but I think that they more than likely keep six. I think, like I said, I just think they have to, unless they really, really love what Ebron and Hines allow the offense to do as additional receivers. Even still, I think that's a hard task, you know, it maybe, but I think they've got to get six in there, but
yeah.
Chris, let's take a real quick 5 second break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to answer some questions that you guys have had for us, namely a couple dealing with next year's schedule, and then you know, a couple others that we've come into as well. So we'll take a quick 5 second break, and then we'll be right back. All right, guys, welcome back. Let's get into some of these questions here. Here's one of the ones that I wanted to run through with you real quick, and we're going to talk about the Colts 2018 schedule here, Chris. What are the games that you're most excited about for the Colts upcoming 2018 season? Now, for me, exciting could be one of a number of things. Is it just what could possibly be against some of the best teams in the league? Because then that's a very fairly definitive answer. Or is it, you know, the games that you see that could be in pivotal points of the year against like rivalry teams or just whatever. So without any real distinctions or anything, Chris, give me one of your games. We'll kind of go back and forth so that we're not so heavily one-sided on this or the other.
Well, I'm not going to pick one of the obvious ones. I'll leave a couple of those because I'm going to jump right to the middle of the season. And that's week 10 coming out of the bye week at home against the Jaguars. Mm-hmm. So first of all, the Jaguars, you know, Jaguars Twitter, calm down, settle down. You had one good season, and don't come at me because I'm not having any of that from Jaguars Twitter. But it's like, you know, the little brother that lands a sucker punch and then thinks he's like knows how to fight. And I'm just not ready for that. Like I'm not ready to show them that kind of respect. They're going to have to earn it. And I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to, by that point, Andrew Luck is not rusty. By week 10, I mean, he has shaken off the rust. This team is humming, you know, assuming that there are no significant injuries, which obviously, you know, can happen to anybody. Assuming there's no significant injuries, this team is looking at kind of heading into the meat and potatoes of this schedule. And they're coming out of a bye week, perfect chance to prepare. Could be riding on a pretty good little streak here because you're going Jets, Bills, Raiders, right, leading up to that. And, you know, all those teams they're not going to be nothings, but those are winnable games in my mind, all three of those. So you make it to the bye week, maybe riding on a pretty decent little streak, and then you're going to come, you know, come home and go up against the Jaguars and have a chance to redeem yourself from the awful way that they've played them, and get them in your building. And I think that could be, first of all, I think it's gonna be a fun game to watch. And also I, you know, will thoroughly enjoy being able to hopefully, you know, rub that in some Jaguars fans' face a little bit, but.
Oh, for sure. You know what? And kind of to piggyback off of that, that time of the year is so critical right there, because that starts a part of the season where the Colts, 5 of their last 8 games are against AFC South opponents. That is so crucial to the end of the season. That is a legitimate, like, pegged area of the season for a playoff run. Should Andrew Luck be back? Like you said, he's not rusty at this point. The Colts should have their scheme pretty well in focus. Whether they're very good at it or not, that still remains to be seen, of course, both offensively and defensively. But that is, I mean, look, they go Jags, Titans, then they have the Dolphins, Jags, Texans, Cowboys, Giants, Titans to end the season. That's a big time crucial. I mean, they really put a lot of the crucial games towards the last 8, you know, the last half of the season. The Colts have almost all of their AFC South games in that back end of the season. So that definitely kicks off a really important part of the season for the Colts. If we're going to go just exciting, I think that the Colts week 3 against the Eagles at the Eagles is going to be exciting. That's the return, you know, the defending Super Bowl champions. They're going to more than likely have Carson Wentz back under center, Reich going up, you know, to his former employer, basically to his former team, coming in, trying to embarrass them in the Philadelphia arena is not going to be an easy task. I think that's going to be a lot of fun to watch, to kind of see how Reich, I think that's going to be our first real example of how Reich can coach in a highly volatile situation. Yes, there's going to be the love and the hugs and stuff before the game, but what goes after that? What happens to Reich? How does he, you know, throw his 1-2 punch, and where does he throw him? You know what I'm saying? In that game, I think that game is going to be a lot of fun to watch for that reason alone. Not to mention you're going up against a team that is really, really still very, very good. This isn't a team that lost several veterans or anything like that, or several of their young talents after the Super Bowl. This is a team that is really, really good and has an excellent roster, probably one of the top couple rosters in the NFL. So this is going to be a big time challenge for not only a very young Colts team, but a very young and green head coach in Frank Reich going up against his former team.
Well, and the neat thing about that too is that's really going to be the first time that the Colts have to play a really tough opponent.
Yeah.
I mean, the Bengals, I never know what to think about the Bengals. I mean, we just don't know.
Year to
sure.
Year.
Sure. Andy Dalton could come out playing like 2015 Andy Dalton, but I'm not holding my breath. I think that was more the anomaly than his reality. The Redskins, maybe they're good. Maybe they're not dominant. We'll say that they're a talented team, I think. And I think that they can be good, but I'm not shaking in my boots looking at that matchup. I'm saying that's probably a good game, but it shouldn't be one where you're like, oh man, this is going to be hard. Mm-hmm. The Eagles are that at, you know, an away game against a very tough opponent. You know, like you said, one of the best, probably one of the more balanced, one of the few teams that probably could have offense and defense in the top five in the NFL next season.
Right.
You know, so you're dealing with a complete talented team. It'll definitely be a fun matchup. Like you said, there'll be the hugs and high fives and handshakes before the game, but it'll be the first time where we get to see, okay, what is Reich made of? How's he molded this team? And what are we going to look like when we hit adversity? And it's nice that it's happening early. It's also going to be nice because Carson Wentz will probably still be a little bit rusty. Andrew will probably still be a little bit rusty. So we'll get to see, you know, maybe not them at their prime, but you know, you might be able to, maybe you steal a win there. I think at the very least you get a learning experience for some of these young players about what it's like to go up against a real tough opponent early on.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You got another one that you want?
I think it's impossible to overlook, and that's two games later, which is pretty rough ultimately, because the first little stretch of that schedule is a little bit tough, but I mean, just because of the heat of that game, week five at the Patriots is going to probably be the game that every Colts fan has circled on their schedule. Yep. And it's one of those games, man, I just so badly want Andrew Luck to beat the Patriots before Tom Brady retires. It's not going to satisfy me if Tom Brady retires before and then the Colts start whooping them. I mean, there will be some level of satisfaction, but I really need the Colts to beat Tom Brady. Like, and if it could happen at home after the fiasco with McDaniels and all that nonsense, I really think that ended the way that it should have. And I think we benefited from it, but that doesn't mean that you don't want to, you know, pummel that little rat and make him look stupid in his own building and have all of these. Cause then, I mean, you get beat at home by the Colts and then all of these questions start to come out and Tom Brady's probably going to cry cause that's what he does. And, you know, you got Belichick who's going to just, like, say we're on to whoever they're playing the next week. And, you know, Josh McDaniels will probably slam his door and, you know, he'll probably cry to himself too. I'm sure he does that as well. So I don't know. It'll be a fun matchup. It'll have some hype. I mean, it's the only primetime matchup that the Colts have. So there's some excitement there. And I think it's an opportunity. I mean, whether they win or whether they don't, if they come on, you know, at prime time, go into Foxborough and punch the Patriots in the mouth and look like a different team, people are going to sit up and take notice. And so that's my hope. Win or lose, I hope that they're going to go in there. They're going to look like a team ready to play, and they're going to walk in there and punch them right in the mouth. And you're going to have people who have to go, oh, this is not the pushover Colts. And you see Andrew Luck. I mean, I know that Belichick has good history against Luck. The last game that they played against the Patriots, though, with that ridiculous, awful punt play that I don't even know why we're talking about, because I don't know why I'm talking about it, because you didn't bring it up. It's not your fault. But that ridiculous, they were playing well before that. Everybody forgets that game was going pretty well. Luck was playing pretty well. And then Pagano was just like, hey, what would happen if I just ruined everybody's life now? and so, and so I really think like if you could walk in and that changes your mentality, because I think they are the monkey on the Colts' back and have been since Deflategate. And if you could, even if you couldn't get the win, if you could walk out of that going like, man, we give them everything they could handle and they're a better team than us, they should have beaten us because we're still a young, growing team, that would be a big deal to a locker room. I know that, you know, there's not supposedly no moral victories, but that is one where I think if you could go in and walk with them by the end of the season, you could have, you could convince yourself, hey, come playoff time, we'd be ready to take these guys.
Yeah, we can play with anybody at that point. Now, that same game I was focusing on, obviously, I mean, like you said, primetime Patriots. The, you know, whatever is back on, the rivalry is back on type game. But my interest in that is really, that's what, week five. Am I right?
Yeah.
On that?
Yep. Week five.
Okay. So that's week five. That gives Andrew Luck a full month to get under, you know, to get his sea legs. And then you go on the road to New England. And that's such a pivotal game because, like, you, if for every reason that you said, for anything that we can imagine, for anything that anybody out there listening or watching can think of, what a pivotal game that could be if the Colts could pull that out. Now, on the other hand, like you said, can the Colts just go over there and kick some ass for at least a vast majority of the game, win or lose, but really put a really awesome, excellent, and a hard-fought effort out and prove to themselves and everybody that this is a group that is not only is coached by a guy who is relentless, but this, he's built a team and Chris Ballard, and this team believes that they, you know, are relentless as well, and they're not going to stop. But that brings, that follows, or following that is such a really pivotal point in the schedule there. Up through where that gets to just in front of the bye week, okay? If the Colts could do anything to eke out a win there, even if they can't, but get to be playing their best football right there, they play the Jets, Bills, and Raiders before the bye week. That could be three wins going into the bye week and then coming into or coming out of the bye week with all of those AFC South teams after that, starting with the Jaguars. That could be a ton of momentum for the Colts. Just past the midway point in the season. I think that would be super critical for this Colts team being as young as they are and kind of a, you know, there's something to be said about a young team that has been led to believe that they can accomplish all kinds of really interesting things. And one of those things is that they really, truly believe it. They're not a grizzled old veteran. They're like, oh man, I've done this before. You know, just be patient. You know, these guys are hungry and ready to go. And I think that this could really make a young team impressive going into the bye week and then coming out of it as well. So that really interests me because I think the Jets, Bills, and Raiders are all very winnable games. And if the Colts can go into the Patriots game there in week five and prove that they've got this kind of a skill set, Luck is ready to go, the offense is clicking, the defense is starting to make some plays, this could be a team that is surprising everybody.
Definitely. And it would be nice to get back to the point where we have this recognition that Luck is an incredible player. I understand that he's been away from the game a little bit, and so you haven't seen it, but there's just not somebody who's more exciting to watch, more enjoyable to watch play football than Andrew Luck. And I am tired of people just not even remembering how good he is. I mean, if you put together a highlight reel of some of his games and, you know, some of his just crazy highlights, like, it's just, it's stupid. I mean, you don't have to be a Colts fan to appreciate how incredible some of the things he's able to do are. And nobody remembers that because he hasn't played in a little while. And so something like that, a primetime game, that would end that stupid narrative too, that you just get to shut everybody up and be like, hey, you know what? Andrew Luck's awesome. Shut up.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So those are some pretty fun points to look at in the season. I mean, really pivotal, you know, first couple games kind of get everybody underneath themselves. You get a big game against the Eagles. A couple weeks later, you know, you come back with the Patriots, head into a favorable part of the schedule as you get into the bye week. And then coming out of that bye week, nothing but AFC South and a couple other teams. And even the non-AFC South teams, I think with the Cowboys, we don't really know what they are. They're a pretty damn good team. Let's not mistake it. But you've also got the Dolphins in that group, and you've got the Giants in there. And though they've got Saquon Barkley, Odell Beckham, and a, you know, a really up and down Eli Manning, I think that those are all interesting games as well. But I think that, man, I don't know if I'm making myself believe that this Colts team could really do something, or if it's just the fact that if Andrew Luck is Andrew Luck at all throughout this year, that the Colts could be, you know, what they have done. And instead of it being a veteran laced, old scrappy group that's, you know, doing their best to try to get themselves into the playoffs, it could be a very young group that Andrew Luck's carrying in there and could do nothing but give them momentum for years to come. So it's a different look. It could be a similar result, but it would be a totally different momentum building experience, I guess, if that's the thing, for this group and this roster and this organization in general. And not only that, but for the fans, it would be a severe, a serious reinvigoration of excitement, I think. So this year offers, I think, a lot more than people are giving it credit for at the moment. So, Chris, I had a good time, man. This was fun. We got ourselves, you know, through a little bit of mini camp talk. We got ourselves through the schedule, some of the more interesting games that that we see on the Colts plate. And, you know, it was another good good conversation with you, my friend. Thank you for joining us tonight, guys. It was a good time. Thank you guys for joining me and Chris, and we appreciate it. Chris, it was a good time as always.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you guys for being as active as you guys have. Make sure you guys are getting to Apple Podcasts rating and review. Please rate and review the show. Does great things for us. And subscribe to the YouTube channel and subscribe wherever you guys are doing it. Make sure you guys are getting a Stampede Blue and checking out all of our content. A little slow time of the year right now, but we're trying to put out stuff that's interesting. Right now we've got a what if theme going through SB Nation right now. So make sure you guys check out some of that stuff, some alternate, past experience or whatever, alternate past situations if things would have gone differently and such. That'll be pretty interesting to read. I'm anxious to kind of see what some of those pop up to be. So once again, Chris, thank you for your time, my friend.
Absolutely. I'll always look forward to it.
And thank you guys all for watching and listening. We'll talk to you next time right here on the Colts Cast. Stampede Blue.